Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
The race is held at yards of highly chased. It has big sleeves with.
Good morning, this is Annie, and you're here with me on Showreel. I wasn't here last week, but I'm sure that you enjoyed that interview with Lauren about the wonderful film that's out at the moment about her father, John Clark, Fred Dagg, not just Fred Dagg, but John Clark. What a great film. Yeah. What do you reckon, Stephen?
Yeah, it's a really good film. I saw it at MIFF.
What a great guy.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. And just re-watching all those clips.
I know, it's hilarious. What a genius.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolute genius.
And they just sort of haven't aged as well. Like they're as funny now as they ever were.
Yeah, I know. Rolling on the seats laughing. And, of course, in the studio I'm joined by Stephen Gulson, who is billed as an RMIT film expert. Do you hold that as a truism?
I like that. I think I'm going to get a few T-shirts printed up with the... film expert. I've been called a lot worse, so I'll take film expert. Thanks, Eddie.
Yeah. Well, we're here because you've got this, you've curated a pretty remarkable event that's happening at the Capitol on this Sunday, the 26th at 1 p.m. And it's for the term of his natural life, the first or the most expensive silent film ever made in Australia.
Yeah, correct. And this is like the world premiere of the 4K restoration that's just been done by the National Film and Sound Archive. And it'll probably be the only cinema screening in Australia of this. The archive did do a screening earlier in the year, but that was actually the 2K version, not the 4K. So, yeah, we're very privileged to have it. Also, at the Capitol, which is such an appropriate venue.
Oh, that's exactly right.
Yeah, because that opened in 1924 and this film was released in 1927. So this film absolutely did play at the Capitol, which I'll be discussing in my intro on Sunday. So it's a great venue to really recreate that 1920s sort of atmosphere.
It takes us back to a period of Australian filmmaking that people may be unaware of. Do you want to give our listeners a little bit of an understanding of where this film came from?
Mm. Well, I mean, the 1920s Australian cinema, I mean, a lot of these films don't exist anymore, but we were actually doing really well in the 1920s after we've had a dip. So before World War One, I mean, Australian cinema was like absolutely booming, and then production really just stopped and the floodgates opened to America. But by the 1920s, we were making some pretty good films like The Painted Daughters, The Kid Stakes, which has been restored, The Pioneers, Mystery of the Hansom Cab. You know, some of these really classic Australian novels were being adapted. Like, it was actually a really important period for Australian adaptations. And we were sort of getting bigger and bigger. And what they wanted was an Australian film that could really explode internationally. So in Australia and also in American and England markets.
And you know, it's really funny because, like all the picking of the winners that they've done in more recent history, it failed internationally but was a massive hit here.
Yes, yes. Like The Dressmaker, you know, or other films like that where they do really well locally, but they just don't work internationally. Now, it had a few things against it when it went to America. Because The Jazz Singer had just opened.
Yeah, talkies.
Talkies, which was part talkie, part silent. But audiences, certainly in America, were really interested in the whole idea of a film that talks to them. So this whole, the thinking of a colonial, historical Australian film about convicts, which was silent, it just did not really bring any interest to the American market. So it just didn't work at all, and it's never got its money back. But it is a very good film.
It didn't do too badly, though. It was, what is it? It says that it made about £50,000. Oh, £40,000, but it cost them £50,000, which must have been a huge amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they were expecting to be a big hit in America. Yeah. Like, they were expecting to be one of the top 10 films of the year.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. So they had big...
And interestingly enough, because there is no voice, there is no accent. So therefore, silent movies were international in their conception, really, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, the thing about this film is, I mean, it always comes to the question, what is an Australian film? Now, the director, Norman Dorn, was an American.
Yeah.
So Raymond Longford... excellent Australian director. He was initially going to direct this, and then they sacked him, feeling like an American director would actually allow them to get more interest from the American market. The actors were George Fisher and Eva Novak, both also from America. So the feeling was, let's get big international players into this film, and that will allow the international market to really come on board. But it just didn't happen. And Raymond Longford became very, very bitter about being dumped from this film. And he told each and every person who ever asked. He was all over the press. When the film came out, he really started his
own...
What
a bastard.
He did a bit of a Kevin
Gave
Rudd.
Gave them a kicking.
Yeah, a bit of a Kevin Rudd where he's just sort of going out, just trying to undermine the current crop. However, that being said, I think this film was quite remarkable, and people might come along thinking, okay, so it's a black and white film. They actually use tints on the lens. So like there's a ship burning scene and they put a red lens on that. There's a sunrise scene, it's sort of like a yellow lens. So it is coloured to a degree. So it's shot on black and white, but it's actually filtered through these coloured lenses.
I was reading a thing about the director who actually had a court case against certain other film houses for a technique that he used. Mm-hmm. So he was obviously a bit of a gun when it came to experimenting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Norman Dorn was very technically advanced.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So the criticism against him is, well, could he really direct actors? He was more of a technician.
Yeah,
one
right.
of those director technicians, more than someone who was really good with actors. I think the performances here are actually pretty strong.
Funny because I was doing a little bit of research. There's a whole lot of really fascinating things about this film. Mm. And quite besides, I mean, great to go and see it because, as you said, it's not going to be getting many outings. Mm. But probably the end of the silent movie phase in the Australian context and in the world context.
Yep.
It is a fantastic thing to be looking at. But in a whole lot of other ways, it's interesting as well. I mean, one of the small interesting nuggets is that George Fisher, who's in it, was the first person to play Jesus on film.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And also, I should say, Annie, that at this screening, we're very lucky to have Graham Shirley introducing the film. And Graham Shirley has a long history with this film because he actually restored the 1981 version, which ended up opening at the Sydney Film Festival because David Stratton, who was the director of the Sydney Film Festival at that time, he really knew the significance of this film. So he had it launch the festival that year. And Graham Shirley, he got a whole range of different prints of the film because a lot of them were destroyed.
Yeah.
And he sort of put them all together. And so the film that we have today is because of the work that Graham Shirley did. Graham Shirley, he worked at the National Film and Sound Archive as an archivist and a historian for many, many years. And his story of, you know, his involvement in the film was fascinating. So it's we're really honoured to actually have him at the screening to introduce the film.
And as I said, there's quite a few other elements of this film that's important and is sort of revealing about the present day. I mean, the fact that they chose for the terms of his natural life, which is it was a blockbuster in its own day, Marcus Clarke. I have to admit, I've actually read the book. I'm not sure lots of people could say that, but that's a key a novel within the framework of colonial Australia. But of course, white Australia projected to the outside world. Mm. It didn't actually, it had very shallow roots in the country that we're in at the moment. And interestingly enough, the film itself, the director wasn't happy with the natural environment down in Tasmania, which is a bizarre concept. So he shot key scenes in other places.
Yeah, correct. I mean, he did shoot at Port Arthur. So, and that I think that's really interesting to actually see Port Arthur in 1927. But also, the Tasmanian state government, they didn't want them there.
No.
Because they didn't like the idea of Tasmania being represented as this convict state, being called Van Diemen's Land. They were really trying to move away from that. And like today, Tasmania was all about tourism and making themselves look as appealing as they possibly could. So the idea that Tasmania is just run ragged with convicts really went against what they were actually trying to do with their own publicity of the state. So they were actually really against this film, which is, I think, you know, fascinating in and of itself.
Yeah, because it's really a long, the same story. Just done in a different way in the Australian consciousness, isn't it?
Yeah, well, remember Nitram just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, fantastic film.
Yeah, really strong film. But again, Tasmania were really against that idea of, you know, that film, you know, again, Port Arthur and, you know, horrors that have happened there. And they really didn't want people being reminded of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Actually, if you haven't seen Nitram, a horror film without blood,
yeah.
Absolute suspense.
Yeah, and the last 3 minutes of that film is just horrific.
I know.
Just setting up what is about to happen.
I know.
Yeah.
It's the most clever film. Very clever film.
And could I say, Annie, at this screening, we've also got the...
Oh, yeah, you've got other things.
The Capitol Orchestra, right, who are professional jazz musicians who all form together to make what we call the Capitol Orchestra. And they're going to be in performance before the screening, and they're going to be playing a whole range of jazz hits from the 1920s just to sort of set the scene. Because what we're really trying to do, it is a matinee screening, and we're trying to sort of recreate the matinee performance where, you know, historically you'd see a couple of films and you'd have a musical, a live musical performance, and then you'd play the feature film. So it's going to be really exciting. It's only $20 and, probably the only screening of the 4K in the country. And I'm assuming most of the listeners haven't even seen For the Temu's Natural Life. So here is a great opportunity to see one of Australia's most significant silent films ever.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is you've curated a collection of other shorts from the same period.
Yeah. So a whole range of things that we're going to be trying to put on. And this will just be one screening. We're going to try and do more silent screenings into next year as well, because it's very rare that we have an opportunity to see silent films on the big screen.
Because in a way it's made out as if they're irrelevant, but the techniques that were involved in that period are absolutely the basis of later filmmaking, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. And all of the great film directors, you know, like your John Fords and your Alfred Hitchcocks, they all started in the silent period, and that's where they learnt the cinema language. And I think there's so much that you can learn about filmmakers from, you know, the silent period, so much about filmmaking from the silent period. And like you were saying earlier, Annie, it's a universal language, because you don't need the differences in language, and is just kind of stripped away.
Oh, just looking at the careers of the actors in or the filmmakers, they made, like, one of them, the lead, George Fisher, he was only during the silent films. Mm. As soon as it started to the talks, he no longer had a career. Yeah. He'd already made 80 films.
Yeah.
So imagine how many films they were making in a year. Yeah. Amazing stuff.
Yeah. That's right. And I mean, you can watch a film from Indonesia or Japan, and it doesn't actually matter, because what you're seeing is that nationality, and it's not language isn't the barrier that's getting in the way. So it's an amazing medium, the silent cinema, and it's sad that people have fewer opportunities now to see silent films on the big screen.
Well, just to recap, it's on Sunday.
Sunday.
The 26th.
Yep.
1 p.m.
1 p.m. at the Capitol, which is just opposite the town hall in the city. Capitol Orchestra at the start. They're going to play a really fun performance. Then Graham Shirley's going to introduce the film very briefly. And then we're going to play For the Term of His Natural Life at the Capitol. It's going to be great.
Thanks, Stephen. And just to tell people that Stephen Gulsom from RMIT, film expert, has now started an Oz Film Files podcast. So look for that as well.
Yep. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you for coming in.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
My name is Gerald Dwyer, the actor, and I played the lead in a film in What About Sal? You are listening to 3CR.
And you're with Annie on Showreel, and we've got the curator of the British Film Festival on the line. Hello, Kim. How are you?
Well, thanks, Annie. Good morning to you.
Yeah, and of course, the a British Film Festival is coming on at the Palace Cinemas, not just in Melbourne, but across Australia and in Ballarat and places like that. And it runs in Melbourne from November the 5th to December the 7th. I was looking at the program. It's pretty amazing, I'll have to say. Obviously, the British film industry is in a flowering position at the moment.
Yes, we've been able to secure some incredibly high-profile films this year, and I honestly believe that it's the strongest British Film Festival we've had so far. There's just such a wide variety of quality films, and at the same time, we've given audiences the opportunity of reflecting back on classic British cinema with the Hitchcock retrospective and also the British Brilliance Academy Award-winning films.
It is actually pretty amazing, I'll have to say. You've been doing the curating for a long time, so you're in a position to actually tell us about this quite extraordinary level of performance of the British cinema at the moment. I mean, we've got documentaries, we've got features, we've got really high-end actors. I mean, you've got Paul Mescal, you've got Josh O'Connor coming together in a film. You've got people like Chloe Zhao creating a film called Hammett, which is directly related to female experience. You've got horror with Dragonfly, which takes you into an elderly person's life. And it's just incredible, the level of discussion.
Yeah, we have. We've got, as you said, some really quality films. And our opening night film, The Coral, is a wonderful film. And it's, fresh from its premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival. It's a really touching period drama starring the incredibly high-profile Ralph Fiennes. If you're looking for, an emotional and elegant delight, it's just a perfect film and a wonderful film to showcase and open our festival. But I must say the closing night film, Hamnet, which you just touched on before, is an extraordinary film with, Paul Mescal and also Jesse Buckley. And Jesse Buckley's performance is quite extraordinary. And there's some scenes in that film that have stayed with me since I saw it probably 5-6 weeks ago. And that's a film that I'm certain is going to feature in the Academy Awards early next year.
Well, it's interesting too, because you've got a film by Rowan Day-Lewis, who is, of course, Daniel Day-Lewis's son. It's his first feature. But Daniel Day-Lewis had said, I'm not going to be in films anymore, but he's put his hat in the ring for his son's film.
Yeah, he's been off screen for, he's had an 8-year hiatus, and his performance in Anemone is, again, really extraordinary, and it's a beautifully crafted film. And I did mention the other night at the media launch that there's just so many close-up shots of Daniel Day-Lewis in the film, and his facial expressions and his emotion, it's just captivating.
Yeah, let's go back to the Corral, which was the one that's got Ralph Fiennes in it. It's set during the First World War, and it's a reflection on a country area losing its men and the choral master needing to use adolescent voices for the choir. And they're going to sing Elgar's The Dream of Gerontonus. It just brings in so many things here quintessentially English elements. But it's also the first screenplay that Alan Bennett's written for decades. This is actually quite groundbreaking, isn't it?
It really is. And it's a beautiful period piece. And like you mentioned, it's about a choral group that comes together with a German, or well, actually is from Germany, a choir master, and everybody in the town's a little bit suspect of him. They're a little bit concerned, but it's, and Ralph Fiennes obviously plays the master, and so just a compelling story, and it's guaranteed to be, one of the real major hits in the festival this year.
There are other things, though, in this festival, which is pretty interesting. You've got, I brought up the film Dragonfly. I actually watched a screener of it the other day, and my God, what a tremulous little urban horror that is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really wonderful film. That's one that I chose kind of late in the piece, but I was really compelled with that film, and just the relationship between an elderly woman who's doing it quite tough.
Played by Vera.
exactly. Played by Brenda Blethyn. And then her relationship with her next-door neighbour. And you can just feel like there's something sinister maybe happening. But I was really taken aback by that film.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was fabulous. And it's just beautifully acted, beautifully acted. And it's a kind of a three-hander, and it's really worth seeing. But also things like documentaries. There's some really lovely, tasty documentaries. You must have spent a long time putting this all together. Like the film I Am Martin Parr, The Photographer, that's just a great film.
Yeah, it is. That's a great film because it's just such a, an incredible photographer and just captured the essence of Britain. And there's also a documentary about John Lennon and his time in New York City, which I found fascinating, being a child of the 60s. And also another documentary on Twiggy,
which is a
fantastic documentary with some incredible cast that are interviewed, including Dustin Hoffman, Paul McCartney, Jonah Lumley. And as a companion piece to the Twiggy documentary, because the boyfriend is featured in that documentary, we decided to screen the boyfriend, the Ken Russell, dazzling musical from 1971. So that's also a companion piece to the Twiggy doco.
Yeah, how exciting. Also, the other thing that's really interesting about this showcase of British film is the amount of big stars. I mean, we've already touched on Ralph Fiennes and Paul Mescal, who I've got to say is Paul Mescal is just what an actor. But there's also, Bill Nye film and Sons. There's also Emma Thompson in Dead of Winter. There's also this really interesting one with Dev Patel called Rabbit Trap, which it is called a film around folk horror set in Wales.
Yeah, that's a kind of an edgy a horror film. It's got a real edge to it, that film. And Dev Patel, as you said, is such a high-profile actor, and, really, really pleased to be able to to have secured that film. And we're also screening the latest film from Gurinder Chadha, who made some wonderful films like Bended Like Beckham, and her latest film, Christmas Karma, is featured in the festival. And that's a remake or a reimagining of Charles Dickens's Christmas Carol.
Yeah, yeah, which is interesting, isn't it? Because what you're doing is blending the changes in the cultural fabric of Britain in the festival.
Yes, very much so.
The other part of this festival, which is really important, is the, as you said, well, there's the 25th anniversary screening of Billy Elliot, but there's also this really interesting look at Alfred Hitchcock. Now, for filmmakers in particular, not just film watchers, this looks like a really tasty morsel.
Yeah, these are films that are rarely, rarely seen, and the early Hitchcock films from the 20s and 30s, and the documentaries Becoming Hitchcock, The Legacy of Blackmail, about the making of that wonderful film, and we're fortunate to be able to screen that film and also some of the other companion pieces from the period. And you can see Hitchcock's style and just the way he made films coming out very, very in his early work. And this is an incredibly rare opportunity to see these films on the big screen.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, I have to say. The film festival runs in locally from November the 5th to December the 7th. Palace, of course, has got many outlets. Do you want to talk a little bit so people know where they can come and buy tickets, where they can go and see these films?
Yeah, you can buy tickets direct from the cinemas. It's playing at every Palace cinema. From, Palace Church Street, Brighton Bay, Cinema Como, Baldwin, Westgarth, Pentridge, Keno and Mooney Ponds. And you can buy tickets at online at www.britishfilmfestival.com.au.
Yeah, and of course there's the newest Palace in Ballarat that you shouldn't forget.
Yeah, of course, the region in Ballarat. That's been an incredibly important location. It's the second year that we've done the British Film Festival there. And it's a fantastic opportunity for our neighbours in that Ballarat region to see these films before they're released, nationally in the first quarter of next year. Plus, there'll be some films in the festival that may not get a theatrical release. So these films have been hand-picked. And I've been working on the festival since February, so I hope that audiences, find that special film.
Thank you very much for talking to me today, Kim Pallas.
Pleasure, my pleasure. Thank you.
And before I do go, I'll have you know that if you, three people, lucky people, if you ring up now on 03-9419-8377. I've got three passes to the British Film Festival on offer. I just need you to give us a call on 03-9419-8377. This will allow you to go to any film in the British Film Festival, depending on if they're sold out or not. So you just got to check. Otherwise, it's a great offer. So give us a call. Coming up next is Published or Not. If this program's going to be played again on Saturday, so this is only for showreel listeners. Ring up now. We're going to go out with Everything is Great with Alice Skye.
Just how this will end. Everything is great until it's not. Everything is great until it stops. Till it stops. And if it's not you, it's someone else you see. So I definitely shouldn't let you bother me. I don't want more, I just wanna be. I don't want more, I just wanna be enough. Please don't.
like we're friends. You keep me safe and warm. I wish you wouldn't. You keep me safe and warm, just like he could.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.